car, burning down the house here every Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host for the weekly fix of design, architecture, and the creative arts. A little housekeeping first. We're brought to you today by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods reminds you that every bite has a story. So whether it's a tomato, or for our British friends, a tomato, a muffin, or a T-bone steak, your conscious food choices can change the planet. Because at Whole Foods Market, every single purchase you make helps us support things like animal welfare. Animal welfare. Wow, that's good. Equitable treatment of beasties. Organic agriculture, equitable trade, and energy offsets. So let's think before we eat. Let's retake our plates. Thank you, Whole Foods. Been a while. Now for something really interesting and rather different. Those of us who've been to architecture school have been trained in the history of proportion. There are different proportional systems and different notional systems of the arrangement and placement of elements in architectural design and in city planning. In the 20th century, the French architect Le Corbusier worked out a proportional system that he called the modular, the red modular and the blue modular, for different sizes of people. French, slightly shorter, American, slightly taller people, all anthropomorphically stabilized proportions, based mostly on the golden section, also known as the golden mean, the proportion of numbers expressed by the Fibonacci series, 0, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, where any two numbers in the series added together yields the next number. And so a rectangle that's 3 units high by 5 units wide has that golden section. And in the Renaissance, the architect Alberti worked very hard to rationalize in terms of ratios, you know, make it sensible and golden, different proportional systems. The Greeks had the golden section. If you take a photograph of the front facade of the Parthenon and lay rectangles over it, you'll see golden sections all over the place. But there are other systems. Those really rabid listeners will remember way back, summer before last, we talked about feng shui and the elements that promote the harmonious flow of qi. But it has recently come to my awareness, something I had known nothing whatsoever. There is a system of Vedic architecture, as in from the Vedas, the ancient Hindu books of knowledge and of wisdom. And so we're going to speak this evening with Dr. Carmen Quinton, who has a degree from McGill University in Montreal in architecture, has taught interior design and architecture for over 15 years, and now finds herself at a very interesting place in smack in the heartland of the United States in Fairfield, Iowa, where there is the Maharishi University, where principles of Vedic architecture are taught. Now, there are advanced courses, which are very infrequently given, and Dr. Quinton is one of the eight masters of this arcane and marvelous science of organization. And so let's launch out into a maiden voyage of discovery. Welcome back. We are burning down the house. Carmen, are you there? Hello? Dr. Quentin, are we connected?
Hi.
Hi, good evening. Bonsoir, madame. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Very well. It's a cold, cold night in Brooklyn, but the stars are out. And stars are important in Vedic architecture, as I understand. This is a whole new area of inquiry for me.
Yes, the stars and the planets, the sun, are very important in Vedic architecture. Because when we do Vedic architecture, this is one of the world's most ancient and complete systems of architecture and planning. We take into account the influences of the star, the sun, the moon, and the planets. And this is in reference to the North and South Poles, and also the equator.
On Earth. Is it because of the magnetic fields, or are there other forces that are cosmic and maybe paranormal that ordinary Western physicists might not be aware of?
Yeah, it's not only the magnetic fields. Stapatyaveda or Vedic architecture is in tune with all the laws of nature, so it doesn't violate any of the laws of nature. And it connects the individual intelligence with cosmic intelligence, the individual's physiology with cosmic physiology.
Now, I'm not a big... that is to say, I'm ignorant about Hindu philosophy, which I guess the Vedas are the foundation of Hindu thought. Is that correct?
The Vedas are total knowledge. They may have originated in that part of the world, but they are universal. They're knowledge of everything in creation, manifest world and unmanifest world.
So when we talk about a cosmic knowledge, what does that mean?
That would mean the laws of nature that creation uses to manifest everything in the world.
Okay. I'm reading up a little bit here. I have some cheat sheet notes. We'll get into quantum physics and something called the Meissner effect. Is that correct?
Yes, there is something called the Meissner effect.
Yeah, and we'll get around to that later. This is not only a system for arranging a single house, but also, as I understand, whole cities and perhaps even the arrangement of materials within a single room. Is that correct?
That's correct. Anything in the manifest world. So town planning, city planning, houses, rooms, even it goes to statues, anything like that. Follow the principles of Maharshi Stapajivate and then tune with nature. What that means, Wayne, in tune, Curtis, in tune with nature, it means that it uses the same intelligence that nature uses to create everything in the universe, be it a grain of sand or a leaf or the planets that are in the sky, suspended like that, never bumping into each other, always rotating in just the right way.
Uh-huh.
The principles that we use, and there are three basic principles that we use, and they're quite simple, actually, and perhaps you've heard of them. One is right direction, another one is right placement of the rooms, and the third one is right proportions.
Mm-hmm. Well, we run into right placement in feng shui all the time, or in ordinary Western architecture. We'd say that buildings should be sited properly so as to take advantage of weather and of the cycle of the sun. But I'm supposing that in Vedic architecture, you've taken it to a much higher a level of sophistication and understanding.
Yes, I would say that that is correct. When we're talking about placement, for instance, in Vedic architecture, we recognize that the strongest influence of natural law on Earth comes from the sun. And as the sun travels from east to west in the sky, it generates different qualities of energy. And so what we do in the homes is we organize the rooms in such a way that they take advantage of the different qualities of the sun at different times of the day.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like in the body. There's a place for everything in a home, according to Vastu architecture. There's a place for the living room, for instance, and a place for the study, and a place for the dining room and the kitchen. And so, for instance, if you place the dining room in the correct spot, then digestion has an opportunity to be at its highest. It doesn't mean that you can eat pizza at 3 in the morning, though, and still
but
have
because that would be an unnatural use of the space.
So yes. You would not be following the natural rhythm of the day to eat pizza at 3 in the morning.
I see. Okay. So it's a complete system of thought and of life as expressed then in now what's the difference between Vedic architecture and Vastu architecture?
It's one and the same.
I see. These are just different words?
Just different words.
I see. From the Sanskrit.
Yes, correct.
Now, I understand that I am led to believe and understand from what little I've been able to read on the internet about Vastu architecture is that a primary and key interpreter of the Vedas as regards architectural and city planning was the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. Is that correct?
Yes. This knowledge is very ancient, and it was first cognized by seers, and then it was passed down generation to generation. There are different texts. The primary texts that we use in Vedic architecture are the Manasara and the Mayamata, and there are other texts also. And what Maharshi did is he took these different bodies of knowledge and examined them carefully in all the different aspects of it, and then he revived it to its purity. So when we have the name Maharshi Vastu or Maharshi Stapajivate, it's in total accord with natural law being the laws that nature functions with.
But these are in interpretations that he brought forward into the current time?
Maharshi had a level of consciousness that could recognize what was pure and what was not pure, what was in balance and what was not in balance. And that's how he revived this knowledge to its totality, so that anybody living in these houses or even passing by these houses can enjoy the benefits of being in tune with nature, of not violating nature.
Now, did the Maharishi have a special interest in architecture? Did he ever dabble in architectural design himself? I mean, I'm just curious.
Yes, he did, actually.
Really? Tell me more.
Well, I know this because a friend of mine built one of the first houses in New Zealand according to these principles, and Maharishi had a direct impact on his house. And also, I understand Maharishi designed many other buildings. And in terms of his special interest in architecture, Maharishi's special interest, I believe, is for all aspects of knowledge, the area of health and the area of music and the area of Jyotish and like that.
Jyotish? What is
Jyotish?
That?
Jyotish is Vedic astrology.
Uh-huh. Excellent. Which I guess is different from Western astrology?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
I see. But it's the same planets. It's the same...
Same planets. A body of knowledge that has... totally in tune with natural law and takes into account the stars and the planets and like that. And again, it can predict past, present, and future, knowing when a person was born, for instance. And then it has a methodology so that it can help avert dangers that have not yet come. So that's the knowledge of Jyotish.
Uh-huh.
In Stapatyaved, we use Jyotish at different times in a project. And what we do is there's certain times in a project that are very time sensitive, and we want to make sure that we start different activities and end different activities in our buildings at proper times according to the planets and the stars.
Excellent. Now, I mean, when you're playing a little Mahavishnu music in the background, just to set the tone, because... remember John McLaughlin and the Mahavishnu Orchestra?
Let's hear it.
It's there. We're going to talk over it a little bit and then listen to them play some of their Vedic influence music while we have our next break, which is in just a couple minutes. When you're designing, Carmen,
mm-hmm.
do you meditate first before you get down into doing design?
Meditate twice a day.
But not necessarily as part of your architectural practice?
No.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Well, let's take a little break, listen to some more Mahavishnu, and we'll be right back. We'll be right back. back. This is Burning Down the House, brought to you by Home. Oh, come on. We're not ready for the next break yet, Dan. Quit messing with me, man. Brought to you by Whole Foods Market, who remind you that every bite has a story. Wow, this is like, Carmen, are you there?
I am here.
Yeah, this is like all of a piece. Every bite has a story. It's like everything counts.
Yes, everything counts.
And so, you know, Whole Foods Market here is like grooving on this Vedic thing. I mean, this is harmonic convergence. So whether it's a tomato, a muffin, or a T-bone steak, your conscious food choices can change the planet. I mean, how awesome is... Who wrote this? This is fantastic. This is wonderful. I'm not kidding here. I mean, this is just sort of like, you know, like, wow. It's like everything is everything, and we're brought to you by Whole Foods, where every single purchase helps them support animal welfare. We're down with that. Organic architecture. agriculture. Equitable trade and energy offsets. Let's think before we eat. Let's retake our plates. Let's think before we design. Let's retake the planet. I sense that you're feeling a little tensed. Don't worry. Although it's true that we have, about 50,000 listeners every week all over the planet, there's no reason to, you know, get all tense here. It's just friends having a conversation. I like this Meissner effect that I've been reading about, which, as I understand it, suggests that if a system, and that could be a house, it could be a city, it could be the arrangement of elements in a room, is complete and in balance with itself, then negative influences just flow around it almost with magnetic repulsion, and that good things then develop. Can you expound on that a little bit?
I'd like to expound on it in terms of cities.
Sure.
And when you look at a city like Paris, for instance, you see that the streets are all higgledy-piggledy. There's no coherence in the layout of that particular city. In Vastu architecture, what we do in city planning is we align all of the streets in terms of the cardinal directions.
Okay.
We have entrances at the proper place. We have open central square with gardens. We place all the buildings according to Astapatyaved. Everything according to the proportions of Astapatyaved. Vastu itself also has proportions and like that. So everything is orderly and everything has its proper place and everything is oriented correctly. Everything has its proper proportions. And when you have, then the system is invincible, then the city itself has a protection of it around it that you wouldn't have in a place like Paris or New York.
Go ahead. Do we lose her?
Nope, I'm still here.
Okay. Go on. I'm saying aha very quietly here. I don't want to interrupt you. I'm listening very carefully. But while Manhattan has a very orderly arrangement of most of its streets, there are many, many, many streets that run east and west. Now, as I understand, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
It's an excellent thing.
Yeah, and but then we have the avenues, which anybody who's been stuck in traffic in a taxi on 6th Avenue headed north, getting off of one of the tunnels. Now, the tunnels run east and west, which is good. But the avenues face generally north and south. So as I understand, that is not auspicious. Is that correct?
If they're in a line with the cardinal directions, that is very auspicious.
Oh, it is. Well, I guess in the case of Manhattan, it's not really quite auspicious because True North is a little bit up and to the left of the way that the island is tilted. So the whole island is sort of facing south-southwest. So
that would lend a certain effect that's not quite as auspicious as it could be. But then it's not only that, Curtis, it's all the buildings need to face the correct direction. They also have to have all the proper proportions. Their entrances have to be east or north, like that. So it's a whole package.
Well, that's kind of, it's kind of tough for the buildings on the cross streets, because then their entrances are either north-facing, generally, or south-facing. So according to Vastu architecture, that's not so good, huh?
South-facing is the worst. It has the it has an influence of problems and suffering.
Wow, now that just totally, when I heard that, it just totally blew me away, because I moved into a house where the entrance is on the south, and, it has been a very trying, exciting but trying last 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm. Curtis, I don't know if you're aware that there's research, preliminary research that's been done on different aspects of life, including crime, for instance. And here in Fairfield, we did a study that showed that 75%, there were 75% more burglaries in south-facing houses. Isn't that amazing?
Wow. See, now I did a feng shui cure to make sure that no one was tempted to, come through my front door. I have wind chimes adjacent and on the east side of my entrance, and that seems to have worked so far. But that's a whole different system of thought, feng shui. That's a Chinese system. So now there in Fairfield, you have the Vedic University, correct?
We have the Maharshi University of Management, correct?
Oh, it's a management school. You're not able to teach this Vastu architecture there?
We haven't set up courses yet to teach that. But I think we will in the future.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the training that you received and a pilgrimage that you had to take in order to learn some of this, or maybe all of this body of knowledge.
Well, I go back about 25 years when I was a partner in one of the oldest firms in Montreal. And I was doing a Bank of Montreal project. We were doing a renovation. It was one of our bread and butter companies. And all of a sudden, this knowingness came over me, never having heard about Vastu architecture, Stapatyavate, or anything like that. And I just knew that I was harming my clients with my work.
It was just an intuitive hit that you had?
Yeah, it was just one of those aha moments.
Uh-huh.
Just this knowingness came about that was the situation.
Do you recall what specifically was happening that you just felt was so wrong?
I didn't know what it was. The truth is, I had no idea what I was doing that was incorrect. It was just that knowingness. You know how sometimes you just know something?
Of course.
Yeah, and that's what it was.
And then sometimes we don't know anything, and we're just stumbling blindly along. And and all kinds of unintended things happen. So you had this.
Well, then I decided,
yes,
I'm not going to do architecture anymore. I don't want to hurt people with my work. And at that time, interestingly enough, we had a car accident, and then I started to reevaluate what my life was about. And I decided to move to Fairfield, which is the town that I still live in. And it had a lot of people meditating, and it had a school that was consciousness-based, and I wanted my daughters to go to that school. And at that time, they were building the Maharshi School, and I had just built 3 schools in Montreal, so I thought this would be all right. And we came down, and very shortly after that, Maharshi brought out the knowledge of Maharshi Stapatyavate.
You've been mentioning this term. Stapatya comes from Sanskrit, meaning what does that mean?
It comes from the Sanskrit stapana, which means to establish. And what that means, it's the knowledge to establish everything in the built creation, in the built world, to align with natural law. You use the knowledge of totality, knowledge of fullness, the knowledge of everything in accord with natural law.
For sure, there's nothing like a car accident to cause one to re-examine everything. Last week, I ignored the natural law of that in the autumn, leaves will fall on the roads, and dew will condense on the roads. And when driving a very small vehicle on a curvy road, it is quite possible to encounter the immobile factor of a stone wall. And I ended up leaving my little red roadster up on a Yankee stone wall, and it's still sitting in my driveway waiting for me to get it fixed, because the natural law of small moving object hitting immobile wall was quite shocking. But that's a sort of pedestrian sort of example of natural law. Do you get into the nature of elements and what is right or wrong to use in various situations as you're selecting materials? Like, are there wrong materials to use for different orientations?
When we do stapacivate, like in many parts of the world now, we try to use as many natural materials as possible.
Yes.
And green architecture and sustainability are a very big part of stapacivate. And there are other things that we try to do or that we recommend. For instance, we recommend not being near wires, electrical towers, and things like that. So natural materials are very important.
Uh-huh.
They have a resonance with nature. They have nature's intelligence in them that then transmits into the space itself.
All right. You've touched upon the east, west, north, south. Can you tell us without revealing any special knowledge? As I understand, it's you people who practice Vastu architecture feel that this knowledge is so powerful that it could be misused. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. We have what we call our trade secrets and our rules that we learn when we become Stapacivede or Vedic architectural consultants. And we use them fully in all the buildings that we design and all the towns that we plan. But we don't give them out as common knowledge for exactly that reason. We want to make sure that the knowledge is used in its totality and in its purity.
This is a different kind of science from Western science. Is there anything that's inherently religious about Vastu architecture?
I wouldn't say that it's religious in that way. What it does do, it does bring the building in tune with nature, which does make it very special.
Huh.
Some would say it makes it divine.
You're right.
I'm
tempted to compare some of these notions to traditional Christian architecture, where orientation of a church with, for example, doors facing east towards the rising sun is considered auspicious, if only as a call to remember the blessings of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. And here we see in Vastu architecture that an entrance facing east is also auspicious, because it should bring enlightenment. I'm looking at a little chart here that I found. Enlightenment, affluence, and fulfillment. I mean, so there are some transcultural trends that I see that are rather interesting.
I don't think it's too surprising in many ways, Curtis, because Vastu architecture is our own nature, and so it's bound to come up throughout the world as people recognize their own nature in the buildings that they're creating.
Right, right.
No, this influence of the sun rising in the east is very powerful.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. I want to get back to city planning and the Meissner effect and how it then relates back to architecture, the father of all art. So, Dan, could you roll Song for My Father? Thank you. We'll be right back. is Burning Down the House on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. We're speaking with Carmen Quinton. Do you like jazz, Carmen?
I do.
Did you like that? Did you dance around? One of the reasons that I picked the music that I do, because I have a great fondness for the educational theories of Rudolf Steiner, who says, well, we talk a little bit about, you know, mind-expanding lessons, and then we need to move a little bit. So we like to get a little dance music in there every so often. I want to get back to cities. If we're going to organize a city, I mean, we talked in the negative about what's wrong about Paris. But, hey, I love Paris. I love that vibe. Now, of course, the French, especially Paris, yeah, they love their riots, right? You get the people acting out, and then you get the flicks, and they get the body armor, and there's, you know, moving people through the Latin Quarter, through the higgledy-piggledy streets, just sweeping everybody in front of them. I guess what I'm understanding is that's a result of the chaotic medieval streetscape of, say, the Latin Quarter. Yeah?
Yes, correct.
So when you're laying out an ideal city, according to Vastu, is it it's a gridded city, a Cartesian gridded city, or would you have diagonal roads?
There are different patterns that you can have in different cities, and if you look in the Vedic texts, you can find those patterns. But the basic thing is that you would have a square, ideally. And then within the square, in the center of the square, you would have a Brahmastan, which is the core of silence. And you find that very often in different cities around the world. You'll have a town square, for instance. So here again, we see natural law naturally popping up into people's designs. And then we would have, and again, this Vastu, the overall size of the city, would have an auspicious proportion. And then what we would do is... There's also other things, actually. First, whenever you do any kind of design, be it a house or a city, you would want to make sure that the site is auspicious.
How would you know that? You have to go into the Vedic texts.
There's some principles that I could share with you.
That would be great.
For instance, we would look at the slope of the land. We'd look to see where bodies of water are. We'd look to see where the mountains are, if there are any, to make sure that we have unobstructed sunrise and things like that.
Uh-huh.
Then we would make sure that the entrance to the Vastu of the city is correctly oriented to the east. We'd align all the roads, north, south, east, west, again, with its orientation with a true north as opposed to magnetic north.
Uh-huh.
We'd have proper location and proportions of all the buildings and amenities according to Vastu. And one thing that might interest you is we would have low-density housing as opposed to what you might find in cities like New York and in Paris.
So no high-rises?
Not too high.
Not too high.
Not
too dense.
And not too dense, exactly.
So a lot of green space throughout the city.
Mm-hmm. And also, it should look beautiful from the air.
Huh.
It should be evenly developed, and it should look beautiful from the air. There should be an adequate flow of fresh air, so cross-ventilation is very important.
Within the city?
Within the city, within houses. The quality of air is very important, and the movement of air is very important.
Huh. Well, yeah. I'm struggling to come to grips with this as a system that's universal because it's some of this. All of this, of course, isn't in complete harmony with the generally understood and developing precepts of what we call green architecture here. in the West. But the auspicious nature of north-facing as opposed to south-facing flies totally 180 degrees in the face of Chinese philosophy, where south-facing is, that's like the money shot. That's great because, Chinese topography is quite different from the Indian subcontinent, and also quite different from the prairie of the heartland of North America. How do we know? I'm being a little bit puckish here. How do we know that the Vedas are the transcribers and conveyors of natural law? I mean, they've been around a long time, but how do we know that they're so powerful? Where would we look to see examples of Vastu town planning? We could say, yeah, that's really it. Could you give us some examples, perhaps?
The biggest example that I can give you is our Vedic city here in Fairfield, where everything is laid out according to Vastu. All the houses are designed according to these principles. Okay. And life is good there. There's something very, very special about Vedic City.
Uh-huh. Is that a sub-part of Fairfield?
It's just to the north of Fairfield. It's a city unto its own. It's a recent city. And again, it's designed according to all of these principles. I just wanted to address something in terms of the southern entrances.
Yeah.
Which are diametrically opposed to the knowledge of Stipatyabheda, where we emphasize that southern entrances are the most damaging to the quality of life. And there have been several research studies, not only the one that I mentioned to you about the crime, where 75% of the burglaries were in south-facing houses, but also in terms of cardiovascular health. For instance, there's a practicing cardiologist in Southern California where 50% of his patients lived in south-facing houses. And this is very much what Stipatyabheda would predict, that residents living in south-facing houses would come under the influences of problems and suffering.
Huh. Well, if you live in a south-facing house, such as do I, what can I do about that?
You can close that door and go through another door, go through a north or an east one. And I have to tell you, this is so funny you mentioned that, because the house that I'm living in now, or when I moved to Fairfield, rather, had a southern door. And again, I didn't have any knowledge of Stipatyabheda, and my life was very different. It turned upside down. And then once I started using the east and the north doors, things changed.
Huh.
So direct experience.
Yeah. Now, a good number of our listeners are here in the New York metropolitan area, and many, 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 many of us live in apartments. Uh-huh. So is the entrance to the apartment more important in terms of orientation, or is the entrance to the building at whole? I mean, if you're in a building that has
The building as a whole.
The building as a whole, not your particular apartment.
That's correct. It's just like in a house. The rooms in a house would have different entrances, not necessarily on the east.
Uh-huh.
So the entrance to a bedroom could be on the south or on the west or something like that. But the main entrance to the house is what determines the auspiciousness of that.
Okay, so when I move back to the city, I want to look for a building with an east-facing entrance, optimally, yeah?
Yes, and the building should be properly oriented.
Go ahead.
You want to make sure that the bodies of water, if there are any, are in the right location?
Well, in New York, we have the East River, the Hudson River, mm-hmm. which are generally in the east and the west, and we've got New York Bay, which is in the south, and if you're way uptown, you've got the Harlem River, which is to the north, and if you're way up north, you've got Spuyten Duyvil, which is very turbulent confluence of the Harlem and the Hudson Rivers.
Well, that kind of narrows down where you might want to live if you want to live in an auspicious building, in a fortune-creating building.
So where do you want water to be? Behind you or in front of you?
On the east or the north.
On the east or the north. Okay, so you're writing this down, Dan. Curtis needs an apartment with a building that faces east, near to the East River.
Right.
So that's to the east.
Orient.
Hell, I'm going to have to live in the East Village again. Oh, my God. or Sutton Place. I like that. That's good.
Correctly.
Pardon?
You want it to be oriented correctly. That's one of the most important principles.
Yeah, well, we can't just turn our buildings to face due east. Although
there might be one or two, Curtis.
Although, you know, there's that section over by Chinatown, north of there, where the grid is actually true north, true south. I have to look at the map there. Wow, this is exciting for me. This is helping me narrow down my future here. I'm transformed.
Better reconstruct the whole of New York.
I suggested that about 30 years ago, that we should just excavate all lower Manhattan and have a few little islands, but the mayor would have none of it. So if we were to arrange our cities in this way, they would be absolutely fabulous and full of love, and we would just absolutely love this town. Is that correct? Yeah?
You would have the best chance of that, yes.
Okay, well, such as it is, even... No, Dan, keep Carmen on the phone, and she and I will tie this out after the next break, because I really do love this town the way it is. Yeah, sometimes we love the chaos here in New York, but that means we're just really sick people, Carmen.
Actually, I was thinking during the break, Curtis, what you should do is you should build a new Stepatjevade home for yourself and not even go into a building that doesn't have the auspicious qualities that a building can have.
Well, that's a great idea, except it's all trade secrets, Carmen. And how much do you charge for consultancy? Never mind. You don't have to answer that. So let's get a little bit more information about you. If our listeners would like to know more, they can contact you, yeah?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They can contact me. Email is the best way. And they could contact me at quintonandassos@hotmail.com. quintonandassos@hotmail.com.
Super. Very good.
They can also go to some websites that I think would be very helpful for them, and they can get information as to how they can contact our general organization. And one of them is the www.maharshivastu.org.
That's for those of us who are not on the inside track, that's Maharishi.
Maharishi, M-A-H-A-R-I-S-H-I, Vastu, V-A-S-T-U.org.
Cool.
And they can also go to VastuTV.com. They can get information on that. So V-A-S-T-U-TV.
You have videos up there?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There's some very, very beautiful knowledge on the Internet that you can have about Vastu and about different houses that have been built there. We have pre-designed homes, for instance, that people can look at, and they can just buy the plans and then get going on constructing a new home. And there are office buildings, apartment buildings, all kinds of things.
That's at Vastu TV?
Vastu TV, and also at maharshivastu.org.
Okay, cool. Very cool.
Portfolios of different buildings.
Right.
And
now, if a person wanted to be, you know, like a super supreme master of this Vastu architecture, like you, you sent me an email. You're one of the eight, like, world masters of world peace or something like that. Is that right?
I'm one of the eight master Vastu architects in our organization, which is the Global Country of World Peace.
The Global Country of World Peace. Yep. I'm all for that. Peace and love. We don't see a lot of that in the world right now, do we?
No, we don't. There's a lot of violation of natural law in the world, and we're seeing it everywhere, including in the United States, in our financial systems, and health, every aspect of our life.
I think it'd be interesting if you did an analysis of the United Nations headquarters here in New York and found out why it doesn't work right according to Vastu principles. That would be, because they've been talking about renovating it. I mean, maybe they should just tear it down and do it over again.
Do you remember the study that I mentioned to you, that I was the research study that I mentioned to you in the Faroe Islands? It's a territory of Denmark.
No, where we, no, tell me. Remind
we took
me.
We took 100 buildings, a professor at the university there and myself, and we did a survey of them. We set up a survey that examined the different aspects we would look at in Vastu, including the shape of the building, the slope of the land, where the entrance was, where the bodies of water were, and like that. And then we had recorders go and just fill out the forms, so they had no knowledge of Vastu before they did this. And then the professor looked at the business success of these 100 companies. We only did 30, actually. But he, from a traditional point of view, he looked at their statistics over the last 5 years and like that. And from my side, I did the predictions according to Vastu. And out of the 30 that we did, I got 27 spot on. So the predictions of Vastu are very accurate. Maharshi has said the predictions are as accurate as fire is hot and ice is cold. Whether you believe in this knowledge or not, it just doesn't matter. The predictions are there and they're accurate. And the research that we're doing, not only with this study in the Faroe Islands, but also in the medical fields, are substantiating that the predictions are correct.
Excellent. Wow. An absolute work of love.
So, yes, you're right. I do wish that they would tear the building down and start anew rather than renovate it.
Yeah. Well, I think we've come to our allotted time. It's gone by so very quickly. This has been Burning Down the House on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. We've been speaking with Carmen Quinton, Dr. Carmen Quinton, Doctor of World Peace, architect, and mom. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host. We've been brought to you by Whole Foods, who remind us that, as with everything in life, every bite has a story. Well, you know, we architects don't make a lot of money. We do it for love. Let's go out on a little bit of a love song. Thank you for listening.